Hello, it's Richard Herring here. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. And my stand-up tour is about to begin. Can I have my ball back? First stand-up tour in 6 years. Many of you just know me from the podcast. Don't know, I've done 14 or 15 stand-up tours in my own right. I'm a brilliant stand-up comedian, and can I have my ball back? I think it's my best show ever. That's what the audiences are saying. It's about testicular cancer, but it's funny because testicles are funny even though cancer isn't. I'm really pleased with it. I'd love you to come and see it. Bring your friends. Some of the shows selling really well, some of them selling really badly. It's a traditional Richard Herring tour. But here's where I'm going to be. 2nd of May, Thursday at the Luton Hat Factory. It's a small venue, but there are still tickets left. 3rd of May, I'm at the Bury Hedge End, which is near Southampton. That's looking more full, but still some availability. 8th of May, I'm at the Leicester Square Theatre. There's about 10 tickets left for that one, though I am back at the Leicester Square Theatre in June. And then I'm at St Albans on the 9th, Gloucester on the 10th, Chorley Little Theatre on the 11th. That's sold out, but you can join the waiting list. And then the 12th of May, I'm at Glasgow. Afternoon show sold out. Evening show, extra show, put on, still with tickets. And then there's lots more. Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs. And now, enjoy whatever podcast I've given you. It's free. It's all for you. If you want to pay me back, buy a book, come and see a show. That's all I've got to say to you. Love you.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who this week was belittled by a scaffolder. It's Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Hello. Hello, I'm Richard Herring. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was hanging out with Ubercorn from the Go-Getters. He's like a disco unicorn. Who makes the world revolve? He calls it Rahela Stubbs. I don't know if that's going to catch on. I've just been telling the audience I'm living in the countryside. I'm covered in dirt, the honest dirt. I've got an axe now. I've bought an axe because I don't like paying for energy, which is why I recommend you use my bulb. But like, I still have to pay for wood, right? Don't I? When I've got a proper fireplace in my house. So I've bought an axe so I don't have to pay for wood. I'm just going to go and... This is just out there growing in the fields and stuff. Just going to go and chop some off. I've kind of cut myself quite badly. I tried to break up a pallet the other day. It's harder than it looks. And with an axe, it's really difficult. Don't use an axe for that job. That's what I'm learning out in the country. And yes, it's very polite out in the countryside. I live in Hertfordshire now, but I had two examples of very angry road rage this week. I was in Waitrose car park. So you don't expect to get in road rage there, right? That's a polite place. I saw a car pulling out. I thought, I'll just pull in there. I pulled in there. Another car wanted to pull in there as well. And then they went, oh, hey, we were going in there. There were literally like five spaces within 2 feet of this car. So it wasn't like we'd got the last one. And then they went, you get out, you got to go. I said, no, I was here first. And then they called me a cock, which I do not expect in Waitrose. That's not part. And then I was driving down my local road, which is kind of everyone parks at the side, so you can only get one lot of traffic down. And it was about 100 meter stretch and there was nothing coming. So I pulled out to overtake all these parked cars. And then a scaffolding lorry came the other way. And rather than waiting, as would be polite, they just drove forward so that we were then it was a standoff with me and some scaffolders. And the scaffolders were going, and literally going like that at me. And I literally hadn't done anything. I was in the right.
And so I took a photo of the front of their van. Because I thought, you know, I can probably mention them in the podcast and the name of... And I could get everyone to ring them up and tell them they're rude. My wife told me I shouldn't do that. So I kind of... But I might do. So they belittled me. They were going like that. And I'd done nothing wrong. Felt very bad about it. But I don't know if you've ever been... Have you ever been belittled by a scaffolder? It's a new emergency question. Look out for it. So, Anyway, my guest this week, I hope he's backstage. He was just trying to brush his teeth with a child's toothbrush. And that is just one of the things I may talk to him about now. He's probably best known for his appearance in the Morning After show, which was... pretty bad this morning, Richard Not Judy knockoff from 2000, which had Simon Amstel in it as well. Remember it? That's what he's best known for, is Simon Brodkin, ladies and gentlemen. Simon Brodkin, hopefully. Is he ready? He's brushing his teeth. Oh, he pranked me. Hello, lovely. Come and sit down, pull up a microphone. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm pretty fresh breath.
Yeah.
And I'm happy.
Yeah. You like to brush your teeth just before you come on stage.
I do. I don't like to tell people about it.
No, but... that's why, you know, you have to be careful. When you prank other people will prank you. That's what I've learned.
I don't know if you call that a prank.
It's a prank. I'm the greatest hoaxer.
Call that stabbing a fellow comedian in the back.
So, do you remember the morning after show?
I do. It was original.
Yeah.
I do remember the Morning After show, yeah.
The first time I met Simon Amstel was in Hills Jago's club. I can't think of the name of it now.
The Muse Moose.
And he was on, and he came up very excited and said, I was a massive fan of this morning, Rich Not Judy, and we're doing the set. We've decided to copy that show and do it. And he'd asked me if I had any advice. Since then, he's got a lot cooler. And doesn't reply to my emails.
We always gave him good advice.
Yeah, to become cool. Do you remember it? You were Lee Nelson.
I do remember it a little bit. Yeah. I'd rather not talk about it, but but with that and the toothbrush, I think we know which way this interview is going to go.
It's a child's toothbrush.
It was a kid's toothbrush, and I did the Morning After show. Now the Morning After show was it was Simon Amstel hosting and Lee. Me as Lee had a little role, and it was great.
Was Roland Rat on it? Really? There was on Wikipedia. It says, and this can't be true, because it says Roland Rat was on it. It says that Big Daddy was on it.
I think Simon Amstel might have edited that in hindsight to make the show grander.
Big Daddy had been dead. Certainly,
Big Daddy
wasn't
on it. Big Daddy wasn't on it.
No, Big Daddy. Was Roland Rat not on it?
Roland Rat, I didn't see, but I imagine him and his entourage would have kept separate.
So I met you, I think, the first time in Swansea, possibly the first time I met you.
Okay.
We did a gig together in a students' union, and it was a big day for me because it was a day I booked into a big bed and breakfast in Swansea, and they didn't have a separate bathroom, but the toilet was in a cupboard in the bedroom. I mean, not even with a door on it, just like in the little alcove there had once been a cupboard, there was a toilet. And you were on with me, and I went back to you said, I'm driving home tonight. So I went back to the bed and breakfast and got myself and didn't sleep in that room, and you drove me back home.
Oh,
do you remember
and you
that?
Shat in the back seat.
I didn't, but do you remember this car journey?
I don't remember. I'm going to preface everything by say I've got a very, very bad memory. I don't even remember brushing my teeth with a kid's toothbrush. But no, I've got a very bad memory, but I don't remember that.
On the car journey on the way back, we were talking, and I was talking your ear off, and we went through some roadworks at 70 miles an hour.
Now I remember, yes. Yes, this man cost me 3 points.
Yeah.
And still haven't paid for petrol money, but there we go.
I'll give you a free copy of the emergency questions book.
Thank you.
Petrol was cheaper back then. It was a long time ago. Well, look, let's get straight into the more topical aspect of what's been happening with you. In the last 2 or 3 years, you've been sort of doing quite high-profile, they're more than pranks. They're kind of, it's like situationalist comedy where you have various characters. You do Lee Nelson, of course, and Jason Bent, the footballer, which is that how it started?
The first one was with Lee.
Was it?
Yeah.
So what was the first one you did?
I gave someone a lift back from Swansea. No, the first one was stealing my own DVD.
Oh, yes, of course, yeah.
In HMV at the launch of my DVD, which you can still buy. And I thought what I would do was, you know, as Lee would do, nick my own DVD from HMV. And I kind of thought that if I did it with enough commitment and enough, you know, and went through with it, that if I ran onto Oxford Street, that there would probably be coppers,
right,
that would eventually come. So that's it. That's it. The idea was to be a little bit naughty with it. It's all coming back now. I think we'd got a police officer, someone to look like a police officer. Let's say we'd got someone to dress like a copper.
Yeah.
And I was going to steal DVD and it was all going to be very funny. What I didn't tell him was, or I don't know how many other people actually told, was that I was going to go ahead and carry on with the full commitment of stealing the DVD. It wasn't just going to be a wacky little stealing a DVD and we get a little picture with the police officer. I took the DVD or several DVDs and pegged it out onto the street and realised that if I did, as you do if you steal a DVD from HMV, eventually a real copper will come calling.
Right.
And that's what happened. And it was, I was running up Oxford Street going, it's my DVD, you can't be done for nicking your own DVD. Which, of course, you can be done. Doesn't matter whose DVD it is.
Otherwise, you could just go and steal them all and then sell them yourself. You
get, exactly.
Which is what I would do. So, I can luckily buy most of mine in the pound shop, and then you can sell them for 10.
Right, that's what we're doing after the show.
Okay.
And so ran up and down Oxford Street, and real coppers came along, and then we had this situation where it was... I wish I had a better memory. we had the coppers who were... I was properly floored by these coppers, and then the other copper, they thought he was a real copper, but he was just like, I'm just pretending to be a copper. And I'm like, I'm just pretending to nick my DVD. And these coppers were, and there was a whole, because everyone got out their phones and they thought I was really properly being done. And yeah. I sort of half was being done. And that was the first foray into, I guess, mixing a comedic situation, clashing with the real world to have real world consequences. Or, as you could say, dicking about.
Well, it is, but it's kind of exciting when there's that unpredictability to it.
With
all these things. I mean, there's the unpredictability. I mean, the most recent one with Theresa May, where I don't know if you're going to tell us how you managed to do these things, and you probably don't want to because you've hopefully planned to do it again. But you somehow managed to get to the front of the Tory party conference and hand her a P-45. Were you not scared you were going to be shot by...
I was scared I was going to be shot. I'm not going to lie. That one, I don't normally worry about my own personal safety. But that one, I was a little bit tense as to what the lines are and what the rules are and what the rules of engagement are.
Yeah.
And I had to be very careful. You know, I had to pull back on my initial idea, which was to knock her out.
But it's a lot. It takes a lot of balls to do something like that. Surely, I mean, like that's or just
yeah. I guess it does. People say it does. And I guess it does. But to me, it feels like, you know, the stepping onto stage or just doing a stand up shit. It feels a bit more natural to me. I think I might be.
I mean, did you know you were going to get that far? Though, were you sitting at the front anyway, or did you walk in from the back and just because you sort of would imagine you'd get spotted 15, 20 metres away and just taken away at least, you know, someone tackled you.
I didn't know. Look, like all these things, when you go and do things in the real world, you're never sure.
Yeah.
What stage you're going to get to. And how far it's going to get, going to go, and whether you're actually going to be able to do it, and that's the fun of the fair, and that's what makes it exciting, and I think that's what people like about it when it does work, because there's a lot of chances that it wouldn't work, or it shouldn't work, or can it work, or how do you make it work? But when it works, it feels good.
How did you make the letters fall off the thing at the back?
magnets. They were fridge magnets.
I mean, if that had happened at the
open the door.
If that had happened at the same time as you were doing, that would have been really freaky, wouldn't it? If you'd managed, if it just she had such a bad. Did you feel a bit sorry for her afterwards? I think that almost. So many things happened.
Yeah,
that
I mean,
speech.
When I was carted off. Well, at first I wasn't carted off. On the day, you know, I thought my highest chance of getting as close as possible to her would be to look and sound and feel like I absolutely fitted in.
Yeah.
And so I had my best Tory boy look on. I whiffed of arrogance. And I had the glasses and I had the shirt and I had the cufflinks and a lot of it's in the detail of the right tie and the right look. And
the thing is, you were under 65, though. That would immediately, I'd have said, I'd have been at the door going, why are we letting this guy in? He's clearly not a Tory.
So I was at the front and I met, I can tell you a bit about the before, but I'm there and I hand the P45, and lo and behold, she took the P45. I didn't think it would go that far, but she took the P45, and obviously I'm thinking, okay, job's done. Let's get ready to be bundled over and dragged out by a lot of angry security people.
Yeah.
And instead, I got a light tap on the shoulder, and I was just asked if I could kindly sit back down. And that's when I thought maybe I fitted in a bit too well here. And that they assumed I was some aide who had handed her a last minute change to her speech.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And I was thinking, stunt done, I kind of don't want to listen to the rest of her speech. Can someone please arrest me? Please, come on. And so that's when I moved into the Boris section and turned to Boris and went, Boris, you told me to give it to her. Why aren't you backing me up, man? And then security kind of did think that maybe that wouldn't actually happen. And that's when they realised that something was up. And even though I looked the part, I shouldn't actually be there.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's when I was dragged out and to choruses of, I think it was, scum, 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 scum.
It's just, I mean, but what's astonishing is, you know, that if you had ulterior motives for that, I mean, presumably you were searched, you went through metal detectors and stuff, did you or not? Or,
yes.
Yeah. So you wouldn't have been able to really cause any harm.
I would have had to be pretty damn good at origami to create a weapon.
Get him.
But you're absolutely searched. You're searched. You go through an airport, you know, style security with the liquids and the and the bag search and the body search.
Blow dart. You could have had a blow dart.
A blow dart, obviously.
That's how to do it.
I had one. I missed. I hit the letters. Yeah. So no, I couldn't have. Her safety was never in question.
But it's you know, you could have. I mean, like, I'm not saying you one could have. It's someone who'd gotten there, and it's quite terrifying, is what I'm saying. That the security's that bad. You could have. You could have got there and at least you know, punched her.
See, I would defend their security. I'm going to, because I don't think I ever put her under physical threat or any harm. And in fact, she said in an interview that I heard later that she never felt any threat. And I think that I didn't have a weapon.
No.
I didn't have, you know, something I could throw at her. I was never intending. I never advanced towards her in a menacing way.
No.
And ultimately, what I did wasn't illegal. And it's, you know, and even my very presence there, you can argue, should I be there? Should I not even be allowed to be there? Well, I think it's quite good that we live somewhere where, you know, a prankster can still attend an event with a high-profile person, isn't booted out on charges that he might do something that might not amuse some people.
Yeah. Well, it is until until somebody takes it too far. It's, you know, it's kind of, I mean, there's a video of you being bundled into the police van afterwards.
Yes.
And the police seemed quite annoyed with you. Were they, or were they being jocular with
They're
you?
They're always annoyed with me.
Yeah.
Always their problem. Except, no. that was my stag dude, and she wasn't a real police officer. She was very happy to see me. I was... But when you... You know, I got bundled off when they finally realised that, you know, I shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
And... got taken as I was being taken out of the auditorium. I don't know how many members of the press followed me. It was quite a surreal and quite fun moment.
Yeah.
You see these melees, these press kind of frenetic hives, and I was at the centre of one. And I was thinking, don't you want to kind of listen to the Prime Minister? She's still talking. And I got taken back, and security were dragging me out, and this bundle, I don't know, 40, 50, 60, but I don't know, more, were all following me. And it was quite funny, because I'm walking forwards, they're taking me to the security area. And these people, they're walking backwards in order to film me and take pictures of me and ask me questions. And when you walk backwards, big disadvantage, you can't see where you're going.
Yeah.
And these journalists were dropping like fucking flies as they were knocking into pillars, bins, doors. And they just, poof, there goes another one, poof, another question unanswered. And it was this crazy melee until they took me into the comfort, it felt at the time, of this sort of police, the security check.
Yeah.
And they closed the door. And it was like, you know, when you close the door and a howling gale,
right?
And suddenly all the questions and the snapping and stopped, and then there's this which often happens after a stunt. There's a strange calm, and partly because the police who are now involved often don't know what you've done. They weren't there.
No,
they've been taken. So these G4S security guards took me, dumped me in the police zone, and they've got me looking like this posh Tory boy being dragged out. They can probably hear echoes of scum, 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 scum. And then getting plopped into this room, and then I'm surrounded by, I must have been five or six huge armed, and I mean armed, very armed. They've got the machine guns, yeah. And they've got the things, and they're looking menacing. But equally, they're looking at me thinking, really? This wasn't what we were trained for. So they don't know what is going on. They know that I shouldn't, you know, I've done something wrong, yeah. But they don't know what. And there's this sort of tension, because no one knows whether I'm in lots of trouble, not a lot of trouble, quite a lot of trouble, what have I done? And eventually this one copper comes up to me and just goes, big fan of your work, mate. But I think this time you might have gone too far. You're about to be in serious trouble, pal. And then goes back to the serious face. They can't be seen to be fraternising with the criminal. And so I'm there thinking, okay, I'm now in lots of trouble. And you can always tell the rank of an officer. I've learnt this by spending a bit too much time in the company of police officers, by the sort of aura that comes with them and the gravitas and the way they get treated by the other police officers. And I knew someone important was around, because suddenly everyone went more serious and the postures get more upright and rigid. And this lady in her 50s with the sort of the non-uniform, so you already know you're dealing with either someone very high up or... Yeah. Not a police
Stella
officer.
Remington.
you've got to sense it yourself. And so she came along, and I knew she was pretty damn high ranking. She flashed her badge, which is, everyone wants to go through that. You only see that in the movie. She flashed her metal badge in a little leather case and then puts it away, and she was looking like she's got me. She's got my balls. She's about to do me here. So she goes, right then, how do you... how'd you get in then? And I just said, I applied. What do you mean you applied? I applied through the Conservative Party website. And her face is just changing expression from I'm going to nail this little fucker to I'm not sure what I can nail this little fucker with. And she said, right, well, what name did you use then? Mine. She wrote that down in her notes. Closed her little notebook. Went and had a word with another officer. And I never saw of her again. And I then felt that moment I wasn't going to be in that much trouble. Shortly after that, I did get arrested.
Yeah.
And they read your rights. And it is tempting to say it along with them because I know it by now, but no. And that's when they put me in the cuffs and then put me in the van.
Yeah.
And it carried on from there.
Yeah. And are you thinking I might be spending the night in jail or I might be...
Yeah.
Yeah. And did you
and the rest
you
of your life crosses your mind.
Were you let go before the night was over? Or did you
just... Yeah. No, they were... They put me in the van. And again, it's fun to do once, right? I know, twice after the stag do, but no, actually I did make that joke too. They bundled me in the van and they closed the van. I'm in the back. It's a police van,
yeah.
You know, and I'm handcuffed and there's four of them in the front with the mesh, and we start driving off, and I'm not sure, you're never quite sure what they're, you know, what their vibe is. They're now away from the boss, and they can probably think a little bit more than themselves and have to be seen to say and do the right thing exactly. And I just said this. They went, are you all right back there? And I did say, it's reminding me of my stag do. And they laughed. And at that moment, I realised that I was going to be treated well by them, because you're just never sure how you're going to be treated and how the whole thing's going to go down. I think, look, being in Manchester, where the Tory party aren't exactly the most popular party, and also being in a police van, which Theresa May was responsible for cutting, slashing their budget,
yeah,
which is why we only had three wheels. I was on home territory, and so they treated me really nicely. You know, one of the nicest things a police officer can ever do. This is like, you know that they have arrested you, but they actually don't want to arrest you, is they say, do you want me to loosen up your cuffs, mate? And if they ever loosen up your cuffs, that means they loosen up the cuffs because they can get a bit tight. So, oh, you're all right. And then we drove, and it seemed like forever we were driving. They said we were going to a local police station. I was worried we were heading for Guantanamo at one stage. We were going a long way, and then we got out, took me into the police station. They start checking you in. And they, you know, they take away your belt and they're about to bundle you into the police cell. And they ask you all the questions and they measure you and they take away anything you can harm yourself and blah, blah, blah. And then another police officer came around the back of the desk and she was sort of, she something a bit odd. And she had a whisper to the guy who was checking me in, the police officer. And they went back and then they came back and they just went, you're free to go, mate. And that was very funny what you did. And I got dressed. And it was all, it was, they couldn't have been nicer.
Yeah.
I mean, they couldn't have been nicer. I got a lift. I'm not going to say it. I got a lift back to the station. And it's better than Uber because they got flashing lights and can go the wrong way up one-way streets. And they were nice as pie. They asked for a selfie. Right. And in the back of their car, they had a police do not cross ribbon.
Yeah.
So I put a bit of that across my face for a wacky selfie. And And I'm still friends with them to this day. No, I'm not, but they were great. They were kind. They got the joke. They realised.
Yeah. And were you doing it for something, or were you just doing it for the sake of it? Or do you do these things because presumably you haven't got a film crew with you, but it's all being filmed? Or did you have a film crew with you?
No. I wish I did.
No, but it was all film. So I mean, you presumably
it's film because it was live on the BBC.
Yeah.
So they were there. but no, I didn't. produce that show.
So that's just you doing that for the fun of it.
That was me just doing that for the fun of it, yeah.
It's insane. It's amazing when someone like that ends up on the front page of a newspaper. Obviously, you're on the front page of all the papers the next day. I love the way, of that comedy transgressing the boundaries of the stage and becoming this real thing and this improvised thing where anything could happen. It's just so exciting. I think along with everything else that happened in that speech. I mean, the only way it could have gone better if she'd taken the P45 and gone, well, I better pop off then. Which she might have done with relief. She might have gone, oh, thank God.
You got a point. Let's do one, people. she took the P45. Yeah. She made a joke. I think she made a joke about
it. She did. It was a bad joke, though.
She said about, I'll give it to...
I'll give this to Jeremy Corbyn. That's just your joke, isn't
that's
it?
That's what she nicked my material.
You can't come. I've been given
if anyone did anything illegal that day. Joke theft. Come with me, madam.
But I also, the Sepp Blatter one was incredible as well. But with the Sepp Blatter one, that's when he dies, the picture on his obituary is going to be that money falling down in front of his face, isn't it? No, that's
thanks for
that photo. Some
throwing my stunt in with me killing him
when he dies of natural causes.
Okay, thank you.
Probably quite soon, looking at him. But that's it. Is that image? That's his life summed up, isn't it? In that money, you went in and just
yeah.
Gave
that was
a bunk.
That was as Jason Bent, the Premier League football character, the preening Premier League footballer, who was giving Sepp this is for the what was it? This is for the World Cup 2020 bid in North Korea, Sepp. And then threw the $500 up in the air.
Was it real money?
It was real money.
Wow, it's expensive.
It was a prize. Although there, the Swiss police, being ridiculously organised, the first thing they did to me was, we have counted. Here is all your money back. They didn't get the joke. They got the economics of the situation.
Well, and we might talk about this. I mean, because you've done so many, it's incredible. It's sort of incredible that your name isn't on a list that you can apply for a ticket to the Tory conference in your own name and nobody. Oh no, you use different characters' names, know it's you, right? They know they're not falling for this Lee Nelson or Jason Bent. So it's incredible that you're not like the little light doesn't go boop boop for like Simon Brodkin's. It's quite an unusual name. Boop 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 boop. Yeah. Boop. Don't let him in, or near the front at least. Jackie hasn't got any money. But you started off as you were a doctor to begin with. You trained as a doctor and you worked as a doctor.
Yeah, that was a more dangerous place for me to be.
Was it?
I trained as a doctor and was a doctor. That always happens at the end.
Yeah.
You know, you've been doing all that stuff. You're now a doctor. Woo! I did.
Were you still working as a doctor, like when you were doing gigs in the early days of the gigs?
No. I kind of foolishly, whatever you want to call it, just went ending with that and starting with that, and let's see how I get on.
Yeah. What kind of doctoring were you doing?
Pretty bad one. Pretty bad one. No, I was a junior doctor, and I did 1 year of being a junior doctor, and for that year. Everyone has to do at least 6 months surgery, 6 months medicine. And I had a more varied year. I did a course, which I don't know whether you can still do now. It was GP, A&E, medicine, surgery.
Right.
So that was the year.
Because Harry Hill also was a doctor, but Harry Hill sort of helped discover you, didn't he? Was it Harry that had seen you earlier?
Harry Hill, yes. He found me in a hospital bed. And he was like, train this man up. No, he did. Harry, a fellow doctor, he was at an early gig I did.
Right.
And then he recommended me to his management company.
Yes.
And so he did. He gave me a foot up. He gave me a great quote to use on my poster in early Edinburgh. And he was there at this mad gig, which was... It was in Camden. And obviously... it was you know, when Harry Hill performs on your bill, that's payday for whoever's organising that gig.
Sure.
So I think the room was meant to hold 200. There were like 450 just fucking crammed in that room, and it was a hard gig. All they wanted to do was hear Harry. And I went on. Someone who was opened, who had done really well at Edinburgh, I think, the year before, really struggled. Someone else struggled, had some lemons thrown at their heads. Where's Harry? And then I came on and made him laugh, and he noted that, right, and then kindly recommended me.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And were you always doing characters right from the beginning? Have you ever gone on stage as yourself, apart from right now, where you are yourself? Have you been on as a stand-up? Would you start as yourself?
That I was doing as Lee,
Yeah.
I've rarely done forays as myself.
Yeah. So Lee, it was sort of, when it started, it was much more of a kind of caricatured sort of chav character. And it sort of seems to have developed away from that a little bit.
Yes.
I guess because also that sort of dates it a little bit, doesn't it, as well?
Yeah, I never called him a chav, but it was all at the time of the big chav thing. But yeah, he has changed as, you know, and softened, I guess, as he has grown up a little bit and he's had to get more responsibilities and he's gone from the baseball cap and the shorts to now wearing a suit. I mean, it is a stolen suit and the security tag is still on the arm. But yeah, he has softened and changed as the years have gone by, yeah.
You're very immersed. I've been very impressed when I am on the bill with you, which I haven't been for a while, but I remember doing a gig with you a few years ago, and you went on stage and you did a set and it went very well, and then you dissected the set. You had someone in the audience and then they came back to the dressing room and you talked about what had worked and what hadn't worked. So you were always very focused on... Which a lot of comedians, I'm terrible at that sort of stuff, which is why I'm doing this now. You know, I do the gig
and
then I'm
doing this regularly.
Even if I wanted to tape it, even if I tape my gigs, which I sometimes do, I can't bear to listen back to them. So I just have to hope I remember the stuff that goes on. But you were very focused, I think, very, very early on.
I think when you've done medicine, you've had to, you know, work your nuts off for a... You know, A levels. I mean, I didn't breeze through. I found it damn hard.
Yeah,
and found the medical school. It's hard. Had to repeat one entire block, but that was partly because I was chucked out of a class I was booted out, so I failed that section. And in Manchester at the time, if you fail one section, they make you come back and take every exam.
Yeah.
And it was the obs and gyne, obstetrics and gynecology class.
Okay.
And there's one, I couldn't help myself. And and they call you out, and you have to sort of perform something in front of the class. And there's a mannequin vagina, but it's just really weird because it's a vagina and a couple of little leg stumps and a little bit of belly, so you feel like you're a fucking deviant just being in the same room as this thing before, right? And I can't remember what we had to do, but the whole thing was patently ridiculous that we were pretending that this thing could even be real, and it was, and I couldn't help myself, and I when it was my turn, I got a tenner out of my pocket, put it inside, got my cash card out, put it inside, tapped away on the clitoris, pulled out my cash card and the £10 note. And went down then about as well as it has now. And got booted out.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Because you might have done that in a real situation. That's what they have to be aware of.
Exactly.
If you do that to that, that might happen. And then
turns out vaginas don't have money inside them at all. So, in answer to your question, work ethic, that's it.
Yeah,
I think when you have been, that's the system you're used to,
yeah,
where you've got a work hard to do that, then that's how I treated comedy.
Yeah, and it worked. I could see, you know, but when because I think I came back to stand up about 2004, 2005, and that must have been around about the time you were You'd been doing a couple of years by then, had you? Or you'd been going a bit...
Yes, yeah. Let's say.
So, you know, but you could see, you know, I came back to it having not done it for years and years.
Right,
and you could immediately see, you know, I was on with Jack Whitehall and just went, I remember standing with Jack Whitehall and going, you know, you in 5 years' time, you're going to be, you know, I'll never see you again. You're going to be, it was just so obvious. And I think with you as well, it was obvious. And there was a bit of Al Murray about you in a nice way, because that's a big compliment, I think, in that you were fantastic at the ad-libbing off and the riffing off the crowd in the same way as he's sort of mastered, but as a different character. And then you ended up working with Al quite early on. One of your first TV jobs was on Al's stand-up show. Stand-up and sketch show, wasn't
Al
it?
Murray's
so he moved away from the landlord to do...
It was multiple personality disorder.
Yes, that's right, yeah,
and he... thanks, Al, if you're listening, because he gave me a big break in... and thanks, Harry, if you were listening before. Can we do shout-outs?
You can, yeah.
Brilliant.
It's fine.
And to the mannequin vagina.
That we might be.
So he put me on his show, which was, loads of different characters.
Yeah.
And I did an early Jason Bent, I did an early Lee Nelson, did a load of others, which was great.
Yeah, yeah.
ITV1.
It's kind of interesting, and I think it was hard for Al, which I suppose, but you've done lots of different characters, and that has made it maybe a little bit easier to branch out. With Al, he did so well with that character, it was really, people didn't kind of want to see him trying other stuff.
Well, I think sketch shows are bloody hard to do.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I've had a bash at one myself. With Lee Nelson's Well Funny People, and they're hard. And as you say, if he's been doing that one single character for many, many, many years, that's what he's tuned to, that's what he knows, that's what people come to expect of him.
Yeah.
And so it is hard.
Yeah. But, you know, I think it's a lot, and it's a bit like Steve Coogan has sort of accepted the Alan Partridge thing now, I think, after... You know what I mean? He kind of went away from it, was doing other things, which is fair enough because he's very talented.
Well,
but he's sort of come back to it and feels at home with it, you know. Now he's the same age. It's the same with Al, I think, as well. He's sort of the same age as the landlord now. And it was always a bit weird when Steve Coogan was doing Alan Partridge and was 23. and now he's the proper age to be Steve.
What
be
was
Alan
that
Partridge.
Tool? What was it? Alan Partridge and other less successful characters?
Yes, that's it.
I think we kind of got the readings of what he was thinking there.
Yeah. But I saw one of you. I saw something, probably your 2006 show in Edinburgh, where you did four. Was this the one we did?
So that was my first show.
Yeah, was that the first one? And it was there was a
best writers newcomer. Mention that
it was.
It's the only thing I've ever fucking won.
I think you did a sort of quite bold thing in that show, which was quite shocking. In that you had a character who was an Asian doctor character, and as you got to do, he was the final character you did. You started putting on the brown paint on your face as you're doing it. It was a very bold decision to do that. What was your thinking behind it? Were you thinking this is a theatrical thing, or just thinking
be bold?
Yeah.
No, what was I thinking? So that show was called Simon Brodkin, Everyone But Himself.
Right.
And so that was me doing a sort of pretend version of a character comic, you know, opening up, I am the man behind the character. And there were four characters, and in between each character, I would get undressed, peel off another pair of underpants. So I think I had four at the beginning, or five, if I included myself, I can't remember. And then start getting the clothes on for the next character that I was about to become, and then give some cod commentary about being a stand-up and a character comic and the history of comedy and all load of nonsense. And yes, the last character was an Asian doctor.
Yeah.
And, you know, the history of that was... I didn't even really, for me, think about the boldness. I didn't think about whether it would be something that would... for me, it was... I pretended to be a pale and pasty white, you know, working class lad, Lee Nelson.
Yeah.
And then I later on in that show pretended I was an incompetent Asian doctor. To me, I didn't really distinguish between doing one and the other.
Yeah.
And I knew obviously when I started putting on the brown makeup, it got giggles and laughs, but I didn't do it to be purposely provocative.
Right.
I was trying to inhabit the character that I was about to inhabit as best as I could, which involves clothes, which involves looks, which involves glasses, hair, and skin colour changes, because that was the person who I was trying to mock and poke fun at was a doctor who I'd come across in my training. Right. Who, let's have a look at this gallbladder, shall we? See if we can take it out. And does anyone know where the gallbladder could be located? No, no, that's fine. Anyone? No, no. Anyone maybe want to guess for me? And this guy was unbelievable. I mean, I remember hours into what should have been basic surgery. Everyone's there for a long, long time. As a junior doctor, what you're doing is like holding a clamp and just thinking, I wish I wasn't doing this. And he eventually, after has the blood and the thing and the this, and he just goes, I don't appear to be able to do this operation. And swanned off, left us all with this gaping wound going, right, okay, well, I definitely can't because I'm just holding this clamp. Anyone? And then they had to get another doctor to come in and complete the surgery. That was the guy we were dealing with. That was, he was amazing. And he was asking before, you know, anyone know where the gallbladder might be? Because he didn't know where the gallbladder was. It wasn't an educational thing. It was him trying to fill gaps in his knowledge. So I was just trying to inhabit that man.
Yeah. Did you get any negative reaction? I mean, it was sort of weird because I think like around Little Britain, it all sort of became... That sort of became almost acceptable. Little Britain were doing characters that they were blacking up for. And it was sort of all right, and then it became not all right again. So did people give you a hard time about it, or did...
Well, you haven't stopped bullying me about it since I got on the show. No, did people give me a hard time about it? Was it contentious? I remember in interviews being asked about it. I always defended it as I have to you now. I think it's very interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
As to whether it is, you know, right or wrong, and it raises... But there isn't a right or wrong. It's to do with the pervading culture, what the general consensus is, and it's probably not really for me to give the answer. It's probably up to the people who it may or may not be offending.
Yeah.
And so I'm not going to say whether it was right or it was wrong. I defended it at the time. And things change with, you know, a pace for good.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen it recently with behaviour that has been considered, you know... The bottom line is, I don't know whether I would do it or defend it now.
Sure.
But I did do it, and I did defend it then.
Yeah. It was sort of, you know, it was like a frisson-y moment, I think. You know, so that was in an Edinburgh show, that was interesting. But, you know, it does... I mean, I think especially... Because it goes back to that, it's sort of Ain't Half Hot Mum, where originally, which is probably before your time, but originally, like, Michael Bates played one of the Charwala guys, and it was, like, properly, like...
I think I probably approached it naively in thinking, well, what's the difference between being pale and pasty and, you know, it's all like that, and being, you know, being... pretending I was Asian and saying, you know, hello, how are you? But I think... The difference is the history and baggage that it comes with that I probably wasn't that aware of, I hadn't really considered at the time.
Yeah.
And it's not the same because it has connotations that come from a place that wasn't just making light of it and treating someone in the same way. Mm-hmm. So I think I can now, I can see that you can defend it, and also you could attack it.
Sure. No, that's interesting. Well, talking to people who put weird makeup on their face, you also pranked Donald Trump.
Yes. Yeah.
Would you ever go put on the full orange makeup if you're going? No, sorry. What happened with the Donald? Because again, was this before he was president, though? Obviously, wasn't it?
It was while he was on the campaign.
Oh, was it? Yeah. Okay, it's because they had the.
So it was.
Weeks. This is one where you sort of think, maybe there'll be sharpshooters in the distance.
Yeah. And I was probably less worried about it. I was worried more about thinking whether the whole thing could happen, because I really wanted it to happen. It was, I'd been trying to... it was a Channel 4 show that I was actually, that was part of a year where Channel 4 followed me, yeah. and they followed me on a few stunts, and at the beginning of the year, it was over the course of a year, we were sort of, who do we want to go for? And Donald Trump was the number one by a long, long, long way, and I thought I was going to have to, you know, follow him to America, and in an area where I had no idea, where I had no contacts, don't know anything about how the land lies out there. To then suddenly this moment, we're preparing to go to America and thinking, okay, we're just going to have to go out there and just see what that, I mean, where do we even locate him? Where does he even, you know, because he did a lot of interviews, but he mostly phones them in from Trump Towers. And suddenly got this news alert on my phone that Donald Trump, in the middle of his presidential campaign, is coming to the United Kingdom to open one of his golf courses, which was like, well, brilliant. He's coming to us.
Yeah, yeah.
So that suddenly made the whole thing doable and feasible. And then it was trying to work out what he would be doing, when he would be doing it, how I can get close, and how I can go ahead with the stunt that I eventually. The whole, if you're interested in the whole how I did it, it's on YouTube. Yeah. The whole build up to that stunt, the result was it did work, and I scattered about 70 swastika emblazoned golf balls surrounding him and all the Trumps as they took it in turns to stand up on this podium. With these golf balls surrounding them, and after I threw the golf balls, I went up as I was dressed as someone who works on the golf course as my disguise to be able to get in, and I announced to the gathered media that this was part of the new Trump golfing range, and is available from the club shop. And you know, pass these around, these new swastika emblazoned golf balls. So I thought it was funny. FBI didn't agree, but I did manage to do the stunt. And yeah, that was they all the Trump family members stood up because the FBI didn't know what to do. Like, what do we do? What do we do?
We're not trained.
Nazi golf balls around Papa. What do we do? And they didn't know what to do. Do you interrupt the great man's speech to take away these golf balls, or do you let him carry on? And there's just brilliant moments of the FBI kind of stepping in and taking one ball and then stepping back out again so as not to interrupt the flow. And he was there for, it was about 10 minutes.
Right.
Him, Ivanka, what are their names? I don't know their names. All the Trumplets.
Yes.
All got up and spoke and surrounded by these golf balls.
And were you taken away in that one, or were you still standing there?
I was taken away on that one. That one was, that was actually, I got pretty lucky there because there were so many different security services there. There was the Scottish police, there was the counter-terrorism unit, there was the FBI, there was there were a lot of different people I could have, and luckily for me, the Scottish police got hold of me.
Yeah.
And and they were more kindly to me than the American law enforcement, and there was a big battle as to, they wanted me, and the Scottish police were saying, no, we'll deal with him. And there was, they had to wait till he'd finished the speech to find out. And apparently, he was absolutely furious. And they were desperate to get their hands on me and interview me, aka waterboard me and leave me for dead. And the Scottish police, you know, if I'm going to do a shout out, I'm going to have to do another shout out to the Scottish police. Fair. Because they didn't even take me to the station, which was officially, once I'm there, I'm in the system properly. Instead, they handcuffed me inside the van, and this was a very kind moment. He offered me a sip of his iron brew. Thank you. They managed to persuade the American authorities in the end that they had things in hand, they promised to get me out of the country. Basically, I think the American police thought that the border between Scotland and England is akin to the Mexican-American border. And once you kick someone out of Scotland, they do not fucking welcome back. Little do they know, I could have gone, boop, and I'm back in. And I'm back in. So they ended up, they say, we'll take him, we'll get him out, we'll escort him out of the country. And I went in a police van, handcuffed, to the airport. And they made sure I got onto a plane.
Yeah. And are you worried that you're... I mean, Donald Trump is someone who I feel probably harbours grudges and has a list. And
yeah.
Are you worried he might come back for you at some point when he's...
I'm fucking ready for him. yeah, he has some fairly unpalatable followers, so yeah. I've heard. And the KKK didn't take very kindly to the whole thing. And three bracketed my name.
Oh, God.
Which means
yeah.
outed me as a Jew.
Yes.
I didn't even know. Mum, I didn't have a mitzvah, what the fuck? No, so that's what they do. If you ever see three brackets on Twitter around people's names, it's because... it's now worked yeah. as the sort of... The people now out themselves or... come out in solidarity, even if they're not Jewish, put three brackets around their name on Twitter to show I'm with the Jews here.
Yeah.
And so I got a barrage of hate and blah blah blah.
It's weird the KKK and Donald Trump being. You wouldn't think those guys would go together.
They've really changed.
So annoying.
Made me change their opinion of them after that stuff. I was willing to give them a go. The burning cross thing, I thought that was just a torch they always do it in the night.
And have you ever been belittled by a scaffolder?
Is that an innuendo for something?
No,
is that...
I have been belittled by a scaffolder this week. So
no, but I'd love to be.
They're quite belittling. I quite like scaffolders because they're crazy, right? I've had people work. I need a scaffolder next year. That's the irony of them. Of these guys.
Well, it's your turn to belittle them then.
I'm not going to employ that. I know I'm. Whew, I could give them. Just don't employ any scaffolders from Hertfordshire, and then you'll definitely hit them. No, don't do that.
What happened?
They made me. They wouldn't let me through on the roads, and then made
sure that wasn't the road for your own safety. Don't come through here, mate.
But I wish I'd done, because I was driving up and I was 100 meters from the nearest pull-in place, and they saw me coming and then still pulled in, and you know, they were 20 meters from their pull-in place. I should have just I was quite near my house. I should have just said okay, and just got out of the car and locked in and walked back to my house because I didn't have anything to do. I'm a comedian, so they just said I'm not going. But then they're so crazy, scaffolders, I think they would probably just take your car apart or drive over the car or put scaffolding through the windows. Don't you think so? Have you ever had scaffolders at your house?
They told me I'd get a grilling. But I wasn't prepared for this emotional stuff.
I'm sure there are some nice scaffolders out there wouldn't belittle a nice man.
I think I have had scaffolding at my... Yeah. Have I?
It's quite. They're all quite crazy because you have
to
be
up there.
Yeah, you're
and
up
not
high.
Really
and you've got to. You build your own little thing that you know could fall down any second. They're crazy men, you know, and I respect that. I like them. I like the fact they were doing wanker signs at me, but I also like the fact that I then took a photo of them and they were going. And I could put it on Twitter. I then wrote to them and said, I've got 220,000 Twitter followers. And I could prank you. But I was going to prank them and get everyone to ring them up. But my wife told me not to do it. So I didn't. Do you listen to your wife? Does your wife ever tell you not to?
When it comes to scaffolding
to
and phone with them, yes. That's...
Did your wife say, don't go and do that to Theresa May? You'll get into trouble. That's what my wife would do. That's
would
why
she
I
said,
haven't
would
done
she
it.
Said that? Yeah. No, she's thankfully supportive.
Is she? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's nice. God. Found the right one there.
I have. She's a real peach. It's the 1930s podcast.
I'll ask you some more emergency questions. That yes, was my new emergency question. Didn't go as well as I was hoping. I thought everyone's been belittled by a scaffolder. This is going to be a great story. What do you most regret destroying with fire?
Bloody hell. There's so many options. what do I most? What have I destroyed with fire?
It's hard. These aren't easy questions.
I wish these were multiple choice. What have I destroyed with fire? Wow. I'm trying to think of something set fire to.
Well, you might not have done. I burnt my middle school art folder.
I remember. I burnt down a friend's kitchen. It suddenly came back to me with a toaster.
By accident.
Well, by accident, but yeah. I didn't really. One of those toasters where they know what you need to do, and it's a bit. And I just went for it, and then went back in and went for it, and we were playing on the computer, and then the kitchen's on fire.
Wow. How much damage was done?
Like all the underneath of all the cupboards on the one side. So
did they need to get any scaffolders in to repair it?
luckily for them, no.
Could be very small scaffolders.
Tiny little one propped up there.
See, good question. It's a good question. I like saying that when I have a good question. Because, it's just reassuring myself.
It is good.
It's a good question. All right, I'll ask you another emergency question. I'll ask you a Christmas emergency question, and I hope this isn't offensive to your Jewish heritage.
Okay.
I didn't put any in for any other religions. I didn't even go, what's it like having Hanukkah or something like that. I could have done that, couldn't I? No. I'm boycotting Tesco because they've had Muslims in there. Have you heard that? They've got Muslims in their advert. People are boycotting.
Okay,
Tesco.
That sounds reasonable.
Yeah. And someone did a brilliant tweet, but I don't think it was about that, but it's about nothing annoys the Daily Mail more than Muslims not integrating into the society, except them integrating into the society. So this is question 45, which you might not want to ask at Christmas dinner. Wasn't Brexit a brilliant idea? How do you feel about Brexit? I went round to my neighbours this week, which was nerve-wracking because, I live in the country and my wife brought up Brexit. My wife is quite annoyed about Brexit. And you have that moment, you go, they live in the country, are they all going to be going, yeah, what a great idea? But they mainly were against it. how do you feel about Brexit?
I think that remaining is the right thing to do. I think the general principle, whether you even get into the heavy politics of it, is reaching out and finding commonality with other people is a lot better way to go than putting up barriers and looking for differences. And I think the way Europe doesn't seem to have gone on any wars since the EU came about, for me, that seems to be a thumbs up rather than a thumbs down for that system.
But on the other hand, Britain, especially England, is the best. And we don't need anyone else. So remember the empire?
That was the long-term strategy. Yeah. It was going to be called the EUK.
All right, this is question 48. There's quite a lot of questions about a Christmas carol and a Muppet Christmas carol in this book, and the 12 Days of Christmas. Is there a part of you that would actually like to live in the Christmas future where Tiny Tim has died in infancy?
You say part, I say all.
There's certain versions of Christmas Carol where I would really like Tiny Tim to die, like some of the film versions.
Yeah.
I think in the Muppet one, I'd quite like Tiny Tim to be dead in the Muppet one, just because it would be so bleak.
I mean, this doesn't...
It's a little frog.
Doesn't
frog
often
Tiny
get said, but Tiny Tim is a massive cunt. I don't know who Tiny Tim... I don't even know the tale.
Do you not even know?
I thought it was an easy pot
have
shot.
You never,
I'm sorry,
have you never,
Tim.
It was a good, correct call. Have you never even seen Muppet Christmas Carol?
I haven't.
No. Is that because of the Jewish people aren't allowed to watch it? Is that, that part of it?
Amazing that you've only just woken up to the sensitivities of what you're talking about.
Here's another Christmas Carol based question.
We kill your Lord once and you won't stop fucking.
There's a good Christmas Carol based question. I don't know if I'll find it in time. How many ghosts are there in the Christmas Carol?
Three.
No, there are four, because Jacob Marley's also a ghost. But then it says in here, if they say four, go no, because I'm talking about the Muppet Christmas Carol where there are two Jacob Marleys, so there's five. So you can't lose. That's a good one. I haven't watched this podcast. I'll try and find one that isn't for Christians who enjoy the work of Charles Dickens.
anything.
Do you think Noel Edmonds has ever spent a Christmas alone?
I doubt it.
No. He's always on the telly and stuff, but I bet one year...
Yeah.
When Noel's Christmas present's just finished and before he kind of got into Deal or No Deal,
yeah,
no one was ringing him up. I want to go to a hospital and be mortgaged to some
lacking,
children.
Lacking knowledge in this area. Had you asked me if there are any Hanukkahs he spent alone?
You must have Noel Edmonds in the Jewish...
No, Noel Edmonds has definitely not spent a single Christmas alone.
Okay, I'll ask you one of... There's some that aren't Christmas-based. I'll ask you one of those. That's so bad. Does it ever concern you the name minstrels has a potentially racist derivation? I mean, sure, there were minstrels in the Middle Ages, but is that what Galaxy named the chocolates after? Are you being slightly racist if you enjoy them? I was generally eating minstrels during this part of the... It's part of writing the book, and that's why the next question is, why do you think that the experience has shown me that I can't open a packet of minstrels without eating all the minstrels? I still seemingly believe on each new occasion that this time I will manage it. Do I secretly know I'll eat them all until I feel sick? Or is it because I'm racist? Or because I want to destroy all racism by eating all the minstrels? Or is my prejudice actually against medieval minstrels? I mean, it raises so many questions. All the minstrels are gone now. I feel bad. I was eating minstrels. I was in my Edinburgh flat eating minstrels.
We're with Noel Edmonds when you're thinking of the previous question.
Yeah. What do you think about minstrels? Do you think they're right? I think they're
evening things up with the gilt. They're all black, aren't they?
Yeah.
So, and they're black inside, they're black on the outside, so they're in no way comparable to the awful black and white minstrels.
Okay, cool. That's good. It's good. It's an interesting question about the minstrels-based question. What else did I was talking about Swansea. You were played a doctor in Absolutely Fabulous, which seems too early for you. Must have still been an actual doctor, and you played a doctor.
Is
that true?
That is true. Yeah, so was my first ever thing.
Right,
and I was suddenly. I can't remember how it came about. It was I was playing a doctor in one of the final ever episodes of Absolutely Fabulous, and. It was just as hard pretending to be a doctor as it was being a doctor. One thing I always remember, that was when the difference between publicly funded bodies and privately funded bodies, it was the stark contrast. So it was being filmed in an actual hospital, and for part of one of the scenes, they needed to shoot in a reception area. But this hospital didn't have... the reception area that they were looking for. They didn't have a proper reception area. So I remember talking to them over here in the reception area. We've been waiting for this reception area to be built for years and years and years and years. The reception area, we can't do it. Within about 2 hours, the privately funded TV company had built a reception area that was only meant to be a temporary little thing for that one scene. Yeah. At the end... the pleas from the hospital, please can you keep that for us because we can actually now use it as our reception area.
Wow.
It was tragic, but that's... Yeah.
My kids were born in the hospital where they filmed Sliding Doors, the bit in the lift with Sliding Doors. Beat that. Both of my kids were born in that hospital.
Not even
literally. I went into the lift and pretended I was John Hannah. And Gwyneth Paltrow had just gone in. And went, you know what the Monty Python boys say? And... then she got off with me and it was great.
Can't be that.
Do you like the film Sliding Doors?
Yes.
Okay. That is the wrong answer. And we've nearly done all the time. It's been very lovely talking to you, and
it's
very interesting talking to you. And there's loads more we could have talked about because you've done hundreds more. You've done Kanye West, Philip Green, that was a good one, Philip VW. Which is what your own personal favourite? A, have any of them gone wrong and not been usable, and not got anywhere? Or B, what is your favourite one that has gone off?
I probably don't have a favourite. I don't have a favourite.
Right.
Training with Manchester City, warming up with Manchester City was fun.
Yeah.
Just because I support Manchester City. I got to warm up with them. That was as Jason saying.
That's the only one you got punished for, though, as well. You were banned
and
from...
that one, yes.
But you were banned from going to football for the season.
Yes, I got banned from all football matches for all stadia.
Wow.
So that was that tour written off that year. So, but that stopped me being able to attend the FA Cup final, wow, where we got beaten by Wigan. So, okay. Shout out to the police and the judiciary. Yes. Yeah, I don't have a favourite. They're all fun. They're all fun to do.
And are you still planning to... do you just wait a bit until everyone's forgotten that you've done them?
Yes.
And then say, all right, I'll do another one. Or have you got any... don't tell us what they are, obviously, but are you hatching more plans?
I've got my heart, I guess, set on Kim Jong-un.
Nothing can go wrong with that one.
And... I've got a character in mind, a really aggressive scaffolder at the border. I'm always on the lookout, but there's no exact planning and plotting as to what or when the next one is.
And have any of them gone just tits up right from the start and you've not been able to do anything, or have they always worked to some extent?
One I had to pull out of, it didn't quite work, and there was only one.
Right. What was that about? Can you tell me? No, are you going to do it again?
I won't tell you. Okay. Just in case.
Okay.
Just in case it happens.
Because you come out of it looking bad. I was gonna put a whoopee cushion on your seat.
And pray.
Yeah. But then I couldn't be bothered.
Prankster.
Thought that again. I was going to go, just sit down. Don't look down. Just sit down. I was going to do that. I had it all planned. And then you sit in it. Probably wouldn't work because these are quite soft seats.
You'd be spending a lot of time with your kids.
I've been really
you?
Thinking about how I could get you. And the trick is, none of this is real. It's all just that audience is just a film, a video of an audience, which is why they haven't really been reacting to anything we've been saying.
Fucking wondered why. So I can just kick them, they won't feel anything.
Yeah, that's absolutely awful.
Amazing.
Well, good luck. I just can't tell you. I mean, you're a fantastic comedian, but I can't tell you how much admiration I have for the bravery of what you do in the real world. I hope you don't get killed, but if you do get killed, we'll put this podcast out as a kind of tribute. I'll put a link to this. If you ever shot the Secret Service, this is going straight up because think of the hits.
That's good.
So, thanks for coming in and talking about it, ladies and gentlemen. Simon Brockin. Been listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest Simon Brodkin. The music you're listening to is by Pest. Not as good as me singing the name of the podcast, though, was it? Not that good. Thank you to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre. Thank you to everyone at Ian Tunes' house, everyone at Ewan Tunes' house, everyone at Go Faster Strike, and everyone at the British Comedy Guide. I am indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. And this is a Fuzz Sky Potato and Go Faster Strike production.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Thanks for listening. Do come and see me on tour. richardherring.com/gigs is the easiest way to find out where I'm going. And gofasterstripe.com, you can buy books and downloads. And just tell your friends about the podcast. If you can't make it to the tour show, if you don't want to buy any products, then every time you listen to an advert, you're helping us make more podcasts with a very, very tiny micro payment. So thank you very much for that. I love you all. It's lovely to meet you on tour, by the way. Hello to everyone who said hello so far. I do come and say hello after the show if enjoyed it, if you want to see me. That'd be nice. You can get a selfie. I don't care. I'm a selfie whore. All right, see you soon.